Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Elite of the Week. Now, as you know, usually I do a bunch of preambling, a bunch of rambling, a bunch of talking about stuff before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show. But this episode of AEW Dynamite, winter is coming, and man, it is just too big to wait. So allow me to introduce to you at this time the man that doesn't need to be able to manipulate metal. He just needs that magnetic personality. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Flo Bo Boyce. How you doing, buddy?
Yo, I didn't see where I was going. Yo, thank you so much for having me on this huge episode of AEW, man. It was so cold out there. Poor Kazarian had a red nose, but a lot of things happened today. I know we're going to get into it, so I'm excited I'm here.
Man, so as you know, I always like to start with the biggest part of the show. And yeah, man, I was tested today. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to start. But I'm going to say this to you right now, Flo Bo, before I get your overall thoughts. I loved this show. I thought it was great, and I will not stand for any naysaying, any curmudgeoning, or any poo-pooing of any kind. I'm just going to start that right off the top, Flobo. That yeah. said, how did you feel about the show?
Well, now that I'm thoroughly intimidated, I think it was great, too. Look, it's because call it spade a spade. The last half an hour was a whole different level, right? But we had to suss through some things that made me go, huh, why, and how, right? And we'll get to that, too, the lesser stories. But the two big stories today, three, if you want to be technical about it, really put this thing in another stratosphere. I'm a comic book fan, and the one things we love in comic books are crossovers. And it looks like we have a giant one on the horizon, so there's no way I can say it was a poo-poo this episode if crossovers are afoot.
Man, so crossover, that's the biggest story, obviously. We are going to have what looks to be an Impact AEW crossover event, and it already, in my opinion, is a big success, at least on Impact side, because if you go to impactwrestling.com right now, the site has been crashed because so many people are looking at it. They're clearly getting tons of eyeballs. If you are a ratings person, I would be fascinated to see what numbers Impact does next week as opposed to this week's Impact episode. But Kenny Omega, the AEW world champion, is going to be addressing the fans from Impact. And Flobo, maybe I'm already getting ahead of myself with this whole thing, but doesn't Kenny Omega have a match at AAA coming up soon?
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other thing. And let's take a step back. This happens all the time with other companies and other industries and other segments. When you have to go against a Goliath, a lot of small companies have working agreements. They have alliances. But for some reason, professional wrestling has kept to their own silos for whatever reason. So I think this idea, not sure it gets a credit or blame, this could be potentially one of the biggest events outside of wrestling. Now, with that said, I am not sure who is on the AAA side, the Impact side, even New Japan side, based on some theories. But This could potentially be one of the things we talk about for a generation. And yes, we had to have a new champion to do it, to turn a new page in AEW, to reset the clock, which happened the very way that made me go, oh man, poor Mox. But I am glad this happened because that opens up storytelling avenues for AEW, for Impact, and et cetera, et al., as they say.
If they can get a true world supercard together, as you mentioned, Impact Wrestling, AAA, New Japan potentially, because Kenta's on Twitter as well, but already these wrestlers are taking shots at each other online. They're already calling their shots of who they want to have matches with. And one of the things that's super exciting to me, even if we take away all the speculation of who else could be involved, even if we look at just Impact versus AEW, the crossovers of who is really on whose team becomes amazing when you think about the Good Brothers and the Young Bucks, who were both a part of the same crew back in Japan. Are they going to be on opposite sides? Are they going to cross the line and join each other? Who knows? There's so many things that are up in the air right now. And the fact that we're all talking about it, the fact that we're all this interested in it, frankly, I think has to mean it's a success, right? This is the great, I feel like I am more interested in this than anything I've been interested in wrestling for a very long time, at least on the network level.
First off, what's going on, Kirsten? What's going on, Heywood and Dylan? Thanks for being in the chat. Look, I was at first going, well, I don't know at first. At first, I was like, well, we tried doing Impact in the summer back during the Slammiversary push. It was considered a brand new era for Impact. They have dedicated fans, not knocking if you watch Impact, but it kind of faded away from the wrestling zeitgeist over the summer. So at first, I go, well, what is the end game? What is, no pun intended, what is the point? But to your credit, a lot of times with wrestling fans, you watch these independent alternative promotions. A lot of it is the appeal that it's the alternative. I always say that derisively. But why not use this for good? There's a lot of people out there who don't even think about being a part of storylines like The North or even Kimberly, for example. Being able to be brought in and put on a brand new stage, it can give a lot of opportunities to new talent. It can give a lot of opportunities for new fans to discover other things, and all tides raise all ships, right? So, or rising tide raises all ships. So I'm excited for it. The only thing I worry about is when we sit down there and we do this fantasy booking, we always say, who would win? Superman or the Hulk? Who would win? Goldberg or Austin? We always say, well, who's booking it? And that's the question I have. Who is booking this potential mega card?
Well, that's some of the fun. You get to see that answer when you buy the show live on pay-per-view, as I'm sure it'll be live on pay-per-view when it happens. Question to you, are there any fantasy booking ideas or matchups you would like to see? One that jumps out to me right away, FTR versus the North. I think those are two just classic great tag teams that could go at it. But do you have anyone you'd like to see go at it between the two?
Oh, man, there's so many opportunities in so many different divisions. I want to see the women's division go back and forth. I want to see how can Su Young hang in the AEW women's arena. She has been on a tear and Impact. Granted, she wasn't on the losing end on her last angle, but I do think she has potential to show out on Wednesday nights and open up that character, the split personality character, to a whole new audience. And Jordan Grace, she's cool too. I like her.
Yeah, I mean, just so many things that they can do. I think it's definitely win-win. I think this is, as you said, I think this is the first time, at least at this level, that companies are saying, let's gang up. It feels very much like, and we'll talk about the Rumble that happened earlier in the card, or early in the show. It feels very much like when a bunch of wrestlers gang up on someone in the Royal Rumble and beat down the giant or the big guy. It feels like that's kind of what these companies are doing. They're saying, let's get together and let's find a way to topple the giant. Of course, I'm not going to say that WWE is easily toppled even by a group of people, but this is just fun for me, man. This is just amazing for me.
This is a shrewd business move. And look, I know we don't like to compare up to Stanford, and we're not here to disparage any brand, but again, there is a kind of fun appeal of being a part of the response, right? You know, when WCW, which we'll definitely make that reference again tonight, when they were the 900-pound gorilla, I remember being a teenager being like, no, man, I'm watching Attitude. I'm watching Jacked and Metal, and little by little, the little guy became the big guy. So everyone loves competition. Everyone will pick a side, but a lot of the wrestling groups I'm a part of, the groups that have moved on from WWE are watching these alternative promotions. They are ready. They are hyped. This is Infinity War, if need be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And something that I wanted to, because right now, obviously, there is so much we can talk about that we're theorizing. And I think that gets kind of puts the cart in front of the horse. So I don't want to go too far down that road, as obviously next week we're going to have a lot more to talk about. But I want to talk about this match. I want to talk about the world title match and how this thing that happened at the end, and something I think that was so beautifully done by AEW tonight, is for months, a lot of people have called this happening, in the sense that they called Kenny Omega becoming the next champion. They called it because they knew it was a rematch of their last match. They called it because he was becoming the cleaner. They called it because he broke up with Hangman. They called it because he won this title. They called it because Don Callis was at ringside. Everything felt like he was going to win. And it's the reason I think it was so perfect is because they took something that was predictable and they made it incredibly satisfying at the same time. And they added something at the end that completely overshadowed anything that anyone could say was predictable. I think this is exactly how you do that long-form storytelling that everyone always talks about, in a way that is still fun, still exciting, and still adds value to what we're seeing. Am I wrong in that case, Flobo?
You're not wrong necessarily, but I disagree. I feel like if the this crossover to the crossover here to me saved it. If that didn't happen, if Callis came out there and saw a match and was like, "See you next week, y'all," and the same thing happened the same, I would be utterly disappointed. Cause let's be honest, Mox and Omega have been in the ring before. This match wasn't necessarily one of their best. Right, the whole building up of the cleaners seemed very truncated. This should have been spread out over a time. My biggest gripe about this new cleaner is that this new cleaner kept saying back in Japan I was the ish. The reason why it doesn't matter to me now, because now you may have New Japan and this kind of crossover thing. But to me, I always felt like, hey, look, you're AEW character. Why aren't the AEW network building you up? They're building up Miro, quote unquote, build you up. And Mox, I loved him, but it got to be he was OP God mode. So had the match ended and it said, see you next week, I would have been disappointed. But like I said at the top of the show, having the championship around Kenny Omega's waist opens up a brand new avenue for storytelling, so I am here for it. If this didn't happen, I wouldn't be on board. I'm on board now.
Flobo, we're agreeing. You're trying to make it sound like we're not agreeing. We're agreeing. I'm saying what you have is this long-form storytelling that finally gets him as champion.
They failed upwards, what I'm saying. It would have sucked if this didn't happen.
But that's why I'm saying they made it great and they did it beautifully by adding that little twist at the end that makes it special. I agree with you. If it was just a Kenny Omega wins, he holds up the title, see you next week. Yeah, we would have said, yeah, we kind of felt like that was coming. It felt like this was going to happen. But because of that extra layer, that extra thing that makes you go, oh, wow, things are even bigger than I thought, that's what adds to it. And I think that's something that AEW does very well, it seems, over the years. Over the years. Over the many years.
Over the years, yes. The classics.
Speaking of over the years, we've been doing this for a long time now. Flobo, we've been chatting about wrestling for a while, and I want to take a moment to just thank everyone in the chat, everyone joining us. You kind of did a good job of it already, but like Dylan Haywood in the chat, we had Kirsten Marie, we have I'm scrolling through here, there's someone else in there too. Anyway, we had a few people in the chat. We always appreciate you guys being here. Haywood, always appreciate you guys watching. Always appreciate you guys hitting the like button, the comment, subscribe, sharing, all that good stuff. It's always very, very appreciated. So thank you so much for doing that. And anytime I talk about the live, we call it a live read in this business, folks, I like to pull back the curtain, let you guys know how things really work. That's called a live read. Next, I always like to go to a little promo portion of the show. It's a little bit of a scale back from the big part of the show that we start off with. So I just want to go to the Young Bucks versus the Acclaimed on the promo. I thought this was interesting because you had the Young Bucks, the Acclaimed, they kind of go at it verbally. Then TH2 gets involved, SCU gets involved. And one of the reasons I liked this, Flobo, I don't think that that segment is going to be something that is remembered for years to come. I don't think it's going to be a big deal on its own, but what I like about it is it feels like it got that tag team division all stirred up again and kind of up and going again. Now we have four teams, TH2, SCU, the Young Bucks, and the Acclaimed, all kind of around those tag team titles again. They took a tag team division that was great. It kind of got beat up and broken down, and now they're building it back up and getting these names back out there. And that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah,
what say you?
What say me, Jack Farmer? Look, I agree with you. I think the tag team wrestling was AEW signature for a while. It got cool. I won't say repetitive. I think that's unfair to say repetitive. But it got to be a very distinct formula that could have been seen as a bit too much, a cloying effect, you know? And then they're trying something new. So, yes, there's new players. There's the Acclaim. There's what's that other group called? I was
the Hybrid too.
Yeah, no, that's a hybrid too. I was going to call them high risk. What's the one that the Young Bucks fought last week?
Oh, Top Flight.
Top Flight. I don't know why I call them high risk. It's almost like Pretty Deadly or Pretty Dangerous or whatever.
Yeah, that's my Pretty Deadly. I can't make fun of you because I make that mix up every time.
High risk, yeah. Top risk.
I'm still not 100% sure what they're.
I'm seeing new players and it's cool, and you could poo poo that and say, look, SCU had time, Hybrid 2 had time, but I love Angelico and you can't go wrong with Kaz, so it's cool to see them in the mix. It's hard to see what the hierarchy looks like now. I will say though, The Young Bucks look kind of weak going after these smaller teams with bad records. They're the best tag team in the world. They should be on top of the mountain waiting for guys on winning streaks to come challenge them, not just being like, hey, your win-loss record sucks. We'll give you a shot. I don't know.
How dare you question whether or not the Young Bucks are the best tag team in the world, Flobo? How can you look at that? I personally look at the Young Bucks, and the first thing I think of, the first thing that comes to mind is the Young Bucks are the best tag team on the planet. I never questioned it, Flobo.
You did for a year. You lived that for a year.
The tag team champions. You can't argue it, Flobo. They've got the gold to prove it. It's impossible to argue. They are the best tag team on the planet today. If you have the championships, you are the best in the world, I say. But I want to move on to what is clearly the other big piece of news here today, Flobo. The other thing that set Twitter ablaze, AEW, why can't you give us just one thing a week so it's easy to format these shows? Come on, you're making it so difficult for me.
Yeah.
I will tell you right now, Flobo, when the lights went out, and the snow started coming down, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time because you knew someone was coming out. You knew it was going to be someone new, but you didn't know who it was going to be. And it was the perfect wrestling anticipation as a fan sitting on the couch watching. I loved this moment. And when Sting popped up on the screen and the music hit and it was Mikey Ruckus. Shout out Mikey Ruckus. That music is perfect. Sting music. Absolutely nailed it. And when he came out, I swear it was 2001. I was so excited. I popped so hard for him. Flobo, how does it feel to have the Stinger back on TV?
Yeah, you mentioned the intro. I didn't know what to expect of it. I was like, is it Shaq? Is it going to be the Cody thing? And then I was like, wait, it's snowing. Is it Glacier? Is Glacier coming? I was lost. I had no idea. I was roped to dope the entire time. Sting. Well, I will say this. I wasn't the biggest Sting fan when I was a kid. I remember seeing the old tapes when he was doing the whole crush thing. So, like, I understand that Jack has him on his top 10 pretty high. He is number 10 mm-hmm. on my list. But there's something to be said about somebody who's a casual fan about one of the greatest wrestlers to ever step foot in that ring, that he still has that magnetism. Some guys lose it. Some guys you say, yeah. I don't know. And sure, his hair is a little thin on top, but he's earned it, you know? Yeah. But he came out looking like he had a mission, he had a look, he had a desire, probably looked a lot more fresher than he did in the last couple of times he was in a WWE ring. So I am glad he's back. It's the kind of star power that will pull casual fans. That is AEW's problem. They're faithful. Are they faithful? They need more grandmas. They need more people remembering back the time. They need more new fans to get on board. I think this may be able to do it.
For me, Sting was someone that I was always an NWO guy, famously an NWO guy. Sting was one Hollywood. Of the guys that I said I was for life, Flobo. And to me, that means something. My word means something. I don't flip flop.
I said Hollywood. I'm a Wolfpack guy. You were Hollywood.
I know that's, but you. I heard the tone in your voice when you said it. He was the one guy, like not the one guy, but there's a few guys. And as wrestling fans, we all get this when you have your favorites and they have their rivals. It's something special when they have a rival and you still like the rival, even though they're the guy beating up your favorite. And yeah. Sting for that was me. He was always beating up my favorites, but I was like, yeah, he's cool though.
Right. I mean, yeah, he had a baseball bat. Come on.
I went and I remember, it was maybe 10 years ago at this point. I can't remember, but I saw Sting in what was supposed to be his retirement match at Bound for Glory against AJ Styles in Anaheim. I was there live. It was I was downright emotional about it afterwards, Flobo. And yeah. When he came back, he was one of those guys that was like, I don't care that moment of emotion was taken away from me. I'm a Sting fan. I want to see more Sting. I'm happy about it.
Yeah, Joker Sting doesn't count, by the way. Joker Sting was not proud of his career.
You know, we all have those moments. we like to pretend weren't really right. a part of the career.
That was a scorch. That was a skirt wearing phase. That was completely wrong. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's the we did. I'm let's pretend that part didn't happen. But we I want to take it back to Sting and what he's capable of. I mean, I don't know what's going on with Sting. I don't know his medical history or anything like that. I was under the impression he couldn't wrestle again. But he's staring Darby Allin face to face. All of the comparisons now coming to life. What would you like to see from Sting in AEW? Do you want to see him, assuming he can compete, would you like to see him get in the ring a couple more times? Would you like to see him be a manager? Would you like to see him be an authority figure? Would you like to see him just be like New Jack in late period ECW, where he just comes out and beats people up at the end of matches for some reason?
Well, that's always fun. I mean, he could do
that
both.
Was fun.
you know, it's, if he could go, I do think, this is my hot take, I think Sting at 50 plus can go better than Jericho at 50 plus. So if he could go, I'd like to see him in a match, maybe in an hour or so, but like at least say, hey, look, I still got it. You still got a chance. What's going to happen in a promotion where a lot of legends are there in advisory roles, if Sting does that too, it's not bad. It's not a worse spot to be, but I think he deserves something else. He isn't Arn Anderson, which is kind of weird to say. He isn't Arn Anderson now carrying the note card. You know, he isn't Tully whispering in the ears. I mean, this guy came out in full face paint, a la Kane with his mask last month at the thing. He's like all about the gimmick. So I really want him to be an advisor for young talent. If he feuds with Darby Allin, I want him to have a proxy. I want him to draft someone to be in the shadow of Sting, because he has those kind of iconic wrestling characters that do not exist anymore. So now's the time you share with some new talent to give him some of that shine. I'm not saying make a disciple. I'm not saying Dale Torborg. I'm saying give another personality flavor to a new talent to have they can use your rub, you know, your shine.
If he can go, if he can get in the ring, if he can still have a few matches, do you have any dream matchups you'd like to see him have before he finishes?
Dustin
Rhodes.
Yeah, with the bullet. Yep.
Really?
Dustin is.
I mean, it makes sense. I get where you're going, but it's just, I'm surprised that one.
Well, because those two, I think more than anyone, have, if you watch their, I mean, I'm more of a late period thing, like I just said. I know his early stuff and his late period stuff. Those two talents, and more than any other wrestlers in the world, maybe The Undertaker too, have done so much more with working less with their talents. Not saying Dustin's slow, but I'm saying you watch a Dustin Rhodes match in 98, in 01, and 2018, they are fantastic, but for different flavors. So I think that would be more of a masterclass. People like clip it out and show kids of how to wrestle with character, wrestle with intention. So that's what I would like to see.
That's interesting. So, and again, I want to reiterate that I was surprised, because I guess when I asked the question, the first thing I think of is that you're going to say someone like Cody or Jericho or Omega or one of the guys who are in the world title scene. And so it's interesting that you pick Dustin Rhodes, who's not that guy, but I guess that does kind of, it is a very Flobo answer. And I mean that with the best of intentions, because you're like, I want to see the match that I think is going to be a great matchup and going to be a great show, more so than just the iconic like stare down before and or after the match.
Sure. Yep.
If that makes sense.
Call up Dustin. Dylan, yeah, I think WWE owns Gold Dust, so you can't call him that.
Yeah, they're not going to call him that. But also, have they had a match, Dustin and Sting?
I think they had some WCW, but I'm not sure. I have to look that up.
Maybe, yeah, that'd be an interesting one. But yeah, that would be a fascinating matchup. I don't know. I think there's so many people I'd love to see him have matches with that I think would be great. I'd like to see him have a match with Kenny Omega. I feel like that'd be, or Cody. I think those are probably the two that pop out to me in singles matches. You know what I actually like to see? I'd like to see him, and you know, I'll talk about it right now, because he came in during a Team Taz beatdown. I would like to see Sting have a rivalry with one Ricky Starks, because Ricky Starks, man, he puts in work. He's in matches on Dark, on Dynamite. He does commentary on Dark sometimes. He's so good on a microphone. And it feels, and this is, I guess, my critique of the night. My critique of the night. Because I critique other companies for this all the time, and I want to be fair. It feels like Ricky Starks has been going against Darby Allin for 3 months. And yes. I want to see him, and I want to see him have a rivalry. I want to see him have something with someone who can get on a microphone and have them go back and forth and tear it apart, because he's great on a microphone. And I want to see him stand across the ring with someone else who also has a microphone and tear the house down. And I think him standing up to a guy with the stature of Sting could be a star-making moment. Ricky Starks, I think they have something with Ricky Starks. I think right now he just needs that opportunity to like really show that he's a star and not a part of a team. And no disrespect to the other guys on Team Taz, I just think Ricky Starks can do it all.
Yeah, I feel, I hate to say, because Ricky Starks is so young, relatively speaking, that the common knowledge is, hey, let's put up a team with Taz. You know, he's a legend. But Team Taz has done less collectively than some of their parts, right? So Brian Cage is a monster. He didn't need that in Lucha. Didn't need that in Impact. He was a guy. And Taz is a human suplex machine. I mean, he's fine for what he does. Taz should have one person, and that person be the person he manages. But you're sitting there with Ricky Starks. He's basically riding the bench at his own team. He has to be the fall guy because Cage is so big. You got Powerhouse Hobbs in there now, too. He's going to be the guy that's going to be the heavy. Fine, the Twin Towers thing. So Ricky Starks will be a fall guy, and that's going to hurt him. So I agree with you, Jack Farmer. But for that to work, for that to bear fruit, for that to headline or even be the side attraction for a pay-per-view, Ricky Starks has to move up and move out of Team Taz.
See, Flobo, that's why I like chatting with you, because you get into the nitty-gritty of how and why. I just like to get to the part where the fun stuff happens. I don't want to worry about how A gets to B gets to C. I want to go right to Z, which is the best part of the whole thing, and I just want to see it happen. But, yeah, I mean, that Team Taz, again, the sum of the parts is a great commentary on that, because I like everyone in it. I like every single person in it, but you're right. It does feel like, okay, they keep talking about why isn't the FTW title given respect, and I keep thinking, well, you're the guy with the title. What are we doing with it? And Cage feels like they're saving him for something, because he's not in the ring all that often. Again, this is my critique moment of the show. I don't like the name Powerhouse Hobbs. Will Hobbs was fine. I thought Will Hobbs was a great name. Powerhouse Hobbs doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, and I'm not a big fan of the new tights. I like Hobbs. Hobbs was one of my guys. Hobbs was one of my guys. You know, like when he was on Dark, like his first time, I was like, this guy is great. I don't like the tights. I don't like the different name. I just want to call him Will Hobbs. I would like to see, to your point, I'd like to just see Taz managing Will Hobbs and let Taz just those two and tear through people. Yeah. I'd like to see that simplify. I like everyone. I just don't really know where they're going.
Yeah, I got to say that Powerhouse Hobbs is I don't want to say lazy, because everyone works hard in wrestling, but it's kind of like, he's a powerhouse. When's lunch? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many things you could have done with that. You can call him whatever, the powerhouse or what have you. But yeah, having a first name isn't bad. You know, why would you replace it with a longer name than Will? Why does it make sense to me?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like I said, I really hope, though, that Ricky Starks is able to move on from Darby Allin and get into something he can do with a microphone. I hope.
I got it. It'd be like if Jack Farmer changed his name to, like, Fantastic Farmer. It's like, it's right. True, but, like, why would I say this?
Right, yeah, but even then there's alliteration. So Powerhouse Hobbs is not an easy thing to say either. It's not like Hulking Hobbs or something like that. I don't know. But, like, it doesn't. So it'd be like me calling myself I don't know, Amazing Farmer. Like, okay, that doesn't really flow. That feels weird. I don't know. Again, I'm sure people who get paid more than I do have it figured out, but I don't get it. I feel like it's a little overthinking. I think some overthinking's happening over there. Just let him go out there and beat people up, Flobo. That's all I ask. In any case, Dylan, by the way, our research department, Dylan Matthews, thank you so much, says that he can't find any matches of Dustin versus Sting on TV. And more importantly, Fabulous Fancy Farmer, Triple F in the house. I like it. I'm going to go with it.
Shout out to Josh Alonso in the chat, too. You guys are funny, man. Yeah, research department.
So, By the way, Tony Khan says Sting is signed for multiple years. That'll be interesting. I'm sure there's going to be I'm sure old Dave Meltzer is going to have his inbox blown up with people wondering the details on that. But I want to go back to the beginning of the show, the Dynamite Diamond Ring Battle Royal. I thought they could have explained this a little bit better. I know they did it last year, but I wish they explained that it got down to the final two and then they stopped and then had a match next week, because I forgot. And I was very confused at the end of this one. I'm also still very confused about what value the ring has, but whatever. It's fun. I don't know. I like Rumbles, so it's always good. And I thought that this Rumble did a really impressive job about telling a lot of different stories, whether it be Scorpio Sky and Sean Spears continuing their rivalry, the Dark Order and Hangman Adam Page, and of course the Inner Circle and all that good stuff. As far as Rumbles go, they're kind of hard to hate, you know, but also hard to really sink your teeth into. What do you think about that?
I'll find a way to hate it, Farmer. I get it, but I don't get it. Like, Rumbles and Battle Royals are time-tested gimmick matches, man. Like, don't try to reinvent the wheel. If you're going to reinvent the wheel, it better be a dope wheel. It better be smoother than the wheel before it. Like, what if it's a casino Battle Royal or one of these? I'm always like, what is the point, right? You imagine, again, we're wrestling fans. We accept a lot. What up, Josh? We accept a lot. But
what up, Josh?
This is the first time you sat down and was like, oh, I'm going to watch this wrestling thing. And you watch a match and two guys win that aren't a tag team. And they go, see you next week. And I'm like, wait, it's over? It's like when you watch soccer for the first time and as American and see tie games end. You're like, what? Like, I don't understand. Why do this to yourself? Have a distinctive winner in this one.
That's not my point. If they had just explained it at the beginning, just a quick, like, because they do it with the Royal Rumble every year. And at this point, if you don't know how the Royal Rumble works, I don't know. You must be very new to pro wrestling. True. Because they still even say, you know, competitors will enter at this time interval. There's 30 competitors and you're eliminated over the top rope. Both feet hit the floor. Blah, 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 blah. They explain it. I think it would have done them a good service to explain all the wrestlers start on the outside. They go into the ring once the bell rings, eliminated over the top rope, both feet hit the floor, and right. We get down to the final two, and the two will face each other next week. I think just a simple explanation or even a graphic or something right. Just to convey that would have been very powerful, because I'm a huge fan, and like I said, even I forgot. When the bell rang, I was like, wait, huh? I was very confused.
I guess my thing is then, if I am one of the last two, so I've thrown out whoever people in the ring, maybe it's the greatest battle royal. I throw out 50 people. And it's down to me and you. And I'm like hype and sweaty and ready to go. I go, in 7 days, and just walk away? Is that what's supposed to happen then? Do I exit the ring now? Like, I just feel like the match should happen then. That's my thing. Maybe I'm just being a crotchety old man.
I think it'd be more satisfying to see the match happen then. Like maybe once you get down to the final two, it becomes a pinfall or submission victory situation. But as a person who's looking at the, you know, trying to think about selling tickets to shows, yeah, sell the match next week. That way you get 2 weeks worth of sales instead of just 1 week out of sales. So I get it. I get why they do it that way. I would have liked it explained.
What side do you want, Farmer? You're always like, give us free stuff. They're like, well, you don't got to stretch it out, man.
I've never flip-flopped in my life, Flobo. Never once. Never once. Oh, I challenge you to find proof.
Asterisk everywhere.
So, yeah, it looks like we're getting more Scorpio Sky, Sean Spears kind of as an underlying thing happening there. One thing I really, really liked about this was the way Wardlow was guarding Sammy and MJF throughout the match. I thought that was just a cool look with him, like, backing them into the corner and being like a wall. I have to say, I think that Wardlow might be my favorite big guy in wrestling right now.
Agreed.
Not only is he good, but like the way his facial expressions and things like that, like when it came down to him and Miro and the way he kind of like loosened the straps and like kind of gave him that look like two hosses are going to go at it. It was great. I think that is what you look for in a big guy, as opposed to, I think some other guys would just stand there. He made it seem like, yeah, you're going to see some beef slapping around right now. And that's what we got. It was great. Wardlow was amazing in this match. The underlying thing that I have to talk to you about, the underlying thing that I thought was really, really interesting, and I don't know if you picked up on it, because I do know that you split your watching time, Flobo. The Dark Order and Hangman Adam Page, they've been teasing that they've been more and more friendly. They kind of helped. They helped each other out a bit throughout the match. Also, Matt Hardy and Private Party working together. But did you notice people were booing Matt Hardy and Private Party as they were getting rid of the Dark Order? Did you notice that?
I did not notice that.
They were booing. Go back and watch. They were booing whenever Hangman or Dark Order were about to get eliminated or when they were having offense done to them, and they cheered the other way. I have a feeling that we might see some kind of twist in there.
Do you think Matt Hardy turning heel? Or do you think Dark Order becoming a face? Dark Order.
I think Dark Order is slowly becoming the lovable loser underdogs. I think are slowly starting to get on board with them because they haven't done well historically. And now that they've got kind of they haven't joined together yet, but it's looking like it's going to happen. The lovable loser Hangman as their guy, I think they could become a very popular group very quickly if they do this right.
First things first, I'm going back to what you said originally about Wardlow. This is why he's the number one talent in my book. On the Flopito Power Rankings, Wardlow is number one because he does the little things that other talent doesn't do, unique look, and he's the closest thing to a homegrown product. But a Dark Order thing, you're absolutely right. I've been seeing the rumblings on the internet, on Twitter, where everyone's like, I don't really get him, but I'm with it. It's quirky. Join Dark Order became a running joke. My lapsed fan friend who got into wrestling during WrestleMania when sports were canceled was dabbling in AEW about 2 months ago, and he was instantly drawn into like this cult, but not really a cult, but religion, not really a religion. So yeah, the whole ground's there. Did I hear the booing versus cheering tonight? But if Dark Order becomes that thing we hate so bad it's good, that John Silver makes me crack up kind of thing, then I could see it coming for sure.
If John Silver was 6'3", he'd be a star. I know no one likes to talk about height in wrestling and whatnot, but he would be a... That's the only thing holding him back, and I love the fact that he's pushing through that, and he's making a name for himself one way or the other. But yeah, I think, man, I'm telling you, if they do this right, very soon, Dark Order is going to be one of the most popular groups in wrestling. People are going to love them very soon. Be very interesting what happens when Brody Lee comes back, though, and how he handles all that. But you've got the makings of a group that people could really, really like there. Also, I wanted to give a quick shout out to the work that they did with the Inner Circle versus Jungle Boy at the end, and the stuff that they were doing on the ring apron. Sammy Guevara and MJF, or not Sammy Guevara and Jungle Boy. Was great. They were going so fast and they were jumping around doing all sorts of stuff. I thought that was one of my favorite, like, I guess, moments in a Rumble I can remember in a while that wasn't like a big surprise or something, but just like as far as the exchanging of moves, I thought that was fantastic.
It's one of those things that if it became a programmer angle, like a little like couple TV week kind of thing, it'd be fine. If it was just a moment for this match, that'd be great too. We've been talking about Jungle Boy for a while now. What's his ceiling? Should he be Jungle Boy? Should he be Jack Perry? Should he change anything? If we're going to pull that trigger, I think Sammy Guevara would be the perfect stage one boss foil for him personally. But like only time will tell.
So we get to the end, and it's going to be MJF versus Orange Cassidy. And I love this, and I'm going to tell you why I love this. I feel like this is such a smart move because Orange Cassidy just pulled off a huge win against Jericho.
Okay.
And now MJF, who just got into Jericho's group and is causing a rift, is now going to face Orange Cassidy in a match. And if MJF beats Orange Cassidy, I think that's going to, especially after he just beat Jericho, I think that's going to send quite an interesting message to the rest of the Inner Circle. I think that could be very interesting. And I think, you know, going forward, I think there's a lot of stuff that can happen there.
I agree with you. I think if MJF wins that match, I think that would put the whole schism between the inner circle. But the question is, will MJF win this match? Here's our cast. Here's somebody who's been kind of not as warm as he was at the beginning of the summer. What if he beats MJF as well? What if that frustration between MJF and Jericho, the fact they have a common foil, someone who's so slippery, causes more of a rift? Does the result of the match matter if it leads to the same division?
That's what's great about it, Flobo, because what is going to happen either way, it's an interesting situation, right? Because, mm-hmm. yeah, if MJF gets beat by Orange Cassidy, then he kind of looks like a fool right before going into the ultimatum moment that they're talking about next week. That's a big that makes it interesting, because if MJF wins, he kind of inadvertently belittles Jericho. If he loses, he kind of inadvertently makes himself seem not very valuable to the inner circle. It's kind of one of these things where, regardless of what happens, there's going to be a ripple effect that's going to have an impact to the group that has so far been the biggest group in AEW. And speaking of that, I want to talk about Jericho and Kaz real quick. Listening to Jericho's music, by the way, as he was walking out, and listening to the words, how serious and kind of evil it sounds, it made me miss serious evil Jericho that we had for a long time at the beginning of AEW. It made me kind of miss like him being the pain maker. I don't know. Maybe I was just feeling nostalgic. I thought it just made me think about it. But I want to add in on this, right? Like, the match was cool. I'm a Kaz fan. We were chatting about it via text. I'm a Kaz fan. I like seeing Kaz get these opportunities. I'm a Jericho fan, so it was a fun match for me. But I love the end. It's very interesting. MJF was coming out with a towel to throw in, the same thing he did right before betraying Cody Rhodes,
right?
Which I think is a little bit of a foreshadow there. But then, of course, Sammy comes out and stops him, but Jericho sees that and thinks that it's Sammy who brought out the towel. So now Jericho doesn't like Sam, is mad at Sammy. It's kind of this perfect miscommunication that's happening, that's destroying the inner circle, essentially.
Yeah, people always ask you this in high school: what killed the Roman Empire, infighting or outside invaders? The answer is both. Now, I've noticed the towel thing, and I thought that was a kind of a cool thing if, like, MJF comes out and is like, oh man, Cassidy's is too strong. It costs the match. But I'm glad it got broken up. But you're absolutely right. The fact that Jericho now can't trust or right now is upset with Sammy Guevara adds some layers to the story. But the question I have is about, did it make sense to have this over Kaz, though? Like, I really feel they just dug him up out of nowhere, and he was the one to be the fall guy in this matchup. I know it served the story. It didn't really matter who Jericho was fighting for this case, but I hate the fact that it was SCU's Kaz being the fall guy here.
It made sense because Jericho had a match with Christopher Daniels the previous week. So I think they were piggybacking on that, because he had... because those guys have never had a match before, from what I understand, which so is like the first time it's ever happened. So in 20 years, when there's a podcast and Kaz comes back and someone's like, hey, maybe he could have a match with Jericho. Have they ever had a match? And then someone in the chat, like Dylan, will say, yes, they have. It was on AEW Dynamite.
That's a callback. I was like, where are you going with this? But I get it.
Now... next week, they're going to decide whether or not the inner circle stays together. Now, in this moment, when I was watching this, I was thinking there's no way they're just going to disband the inner circle. It's not going to break up next week willy-nilly for no reason in a segment. But now that I've seen the whole show, now that I know where the company is going, it's going into a rivalry with another company potentially. Do we think that maybe this could be the actual end of the inner circle? Is there a place for the inner circle within AEW if war is coming?
So I was going to say no. I feel like if war is coming, a lot of those alliances start to blend into each other. We get strange bedfellows. And so it was one of those things that if there wasn't an advertised ultimatum, if it was kind of like put things on hold and figure this out first, I'm with it. But now that there is an ultimatum, I'm thinking someone may defect. I think we may get a split with other talents joining or breaking it up. This may be the reason why, like, MJF might be one nail, but there might be an outside force being the final nail in the inner circle.
Interesting. Yeah, I kind of feel like this might be it. I feel like this might be the moment. And there's so many different things at play, which makes it very fascinating to see how next week goes. I do want to talk real quick about Hikaru Shida. She had a promo and she's scared of Abaddon. Who's scared of wrestlers, Flobo? I've never been scared of an intimidating wrestler in my life
Well, there was that
before.
guy in the other show we do. You can't say his name out loud. What's his
Don't
name again?
you dare. Don't you dare. Not on my show.
Well,
I will take you off the air, Flobo. I will mute you.
I'll be real with you, man. Like, forget the blood. If someone licked anything I owned in 2020, I'll be afraid of him too. I'll be like, yo, keep it. Just fine. You're the champion now.
It would be, when you put it that way, yeah, it is a little bit like, oh, but I want that back. I
Yeah, I'm skeeved out. I vacate the title.
But could you imagine someone licked your microphone and it was like, here, take it back. You could
No.
not disinfect that thing enough.
No, I
I
wouldn't.
don't care who it is. Nope, not.
Just toss it away.
I did feel like it was a little, I liked it because it made, like, Sheeta is a great wrestler and she's been doing a great job. She felt a little like she could have used a little something more fun to her character, to who she is, how she presents
Yeah.
herself. And I think this is fun. It gives her something a little different than just being I'm a defending champion. It makes it fun. It also gives Abaddon something to play off of as well. So I like it. I think it was fun. I think it was great for
I'm
what
glad you
they're
brought
doing
this
there.
up because when Sheeta 1.0 was very, I'm going to be as strong as I can. And almost when she switched up her gear at the beginning of this year, it was almost like a vulnerability about it. Like, I am almost becoming more of a Americanized version of myself. Still very Sheeta, but her gear was really a symbol that changed. Now she's operating from fear or disgust or annoyance. As a character, this is giving her something to work with. She can't just, clench her fist and be fighting spirit for too long, because unfortunately, as American wrestling fans, we tend to get very, very bored at that. We write these kind of characters off as vanilla or needs a personality. So why not have her be afraid of somebody who walks on her hands and knees and bleeds over stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's this old saying that our mutual friend David Newton, we both know he's in the DJ world as well. He has a saying which is people don't know what they want what they know. And people always act like they want the person that's just like the straight up fighting champion. But you're right, when we get that, we sometimes get a little tired of it kind of quickly. So, but what we really want is what we know, and that's the person that can do different things on a microphone and present different ways of doing things. And so I think that that's great. I think I'm with you on that. I'm agreeing with you, Flobo. I'm taking a long time to say I agree.
It never happens, but when it does, it's magic.
So we got Britt Baker versus Legit Layla Hirsch. I want to say right off the bat, I like Layla Hirsch. I think she's someone that can really do a lot of good in the women's division for them. I think she has a unique look, a unique style. She looks tough. I also thought that this match accomplished a lot. But before I get into all the different things that I think it accomplished, what did you think about this match? Did you have any major takeaways?
We're a positive show, right? It's cool that
You can be honest.
the
No,
match
don't say
itself.
we're a positive show, right?
We're
And then
we
lie to the
positive itself.
people.
Do we
This
get
is
our
an
checks
honest
yet?
show.
Do we get our checks yet from Tony Khan? I'm just kidding. He doesn't pay
If
us. Um,
that's the case, if we're waiting for a check from Tony Khan, then
I'm a bit concerned. I'm a bit concerned. I think Layla Hirsch is a fantastic signing. Like, if I was running a women's division, knowing what the pool out there, I think Layla is a fantastic pickup. But I'm starting to worry that the character of Britt Baker is exceeding the wrestler Big Baker, because there were some things in that match that made me go, ooh, cringe and dang. And so the match was okay, but not becoming of someone that was one time a year ago the face of this division.
So I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying. I think she's still entertaining though. I still love it. I think that what I liked about the way this thing played out is I think at the end of the day, you still got Britt Baker looking like the person who wins her matches, but is still kind of a little bit of a ne'er-do-well. While at the same time building a quick rivalry between Layla Hirsch and Rebel that I think would be interesting to see. Now you have Hirsch, who looks like she can at least be a competitor. And now the real thing is Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker potentially having a rivalry. Well, not potentially. Clearly there's a rivalry there. And I am all in on anything Thunder Rosa does. I'm a huge fan of hers. I've always been a fan of Britt Baker as well. So I feel like that's a win-win-win. We're adding sizzle to this division, Flobo. We're adding some sizzle to the women's division, something they've wanted and needed for a long time. We're starting to add these layers. We just talked about six different women who now have things going on in the women's division.
I said this before on another episode of Elite of the Week, but I apologize. I underestimated the power, the skill, the posturing of one Thunder Rosa. Her last couple of matches with Serena Deeb. Now, Serena Deeb's elite in her own right, but like just to see that this could be AEW's blueprint as far as having that balance of performer and character in a way that's unique. There was no one, maybe except Holiday, maybe, but there's no one quite like Thunder Rosa at her level and in her prime right now. You got to build a division around her. If now she is now a full-on AEW component, she's away from NWA, she's in-house now, you got to build a division around her, because that whole segment, the first time I believed anything, the strikes, the desire to beat someone, to beat them down, is when Thunder Rosa showed up.
Thunder Rosa is one of my favorite women's wrestlers right now. And let me ask you this, because it is, and again, I don't pretend to be one of those people that knows what's going on with contracts. I don't have any idea. I don't know where anyone is supposed to be or where they're signed or anything like that. But right now in my mind, I still have her kind of slotted in as an NWA person.
Fair. And
this is clearly AEW. She's been on AEW quite a bit. But I've not seen anything that says, you know, Thunder Rosa is all elite or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
If you are Tony Khan, if you're someone who's, you know, running the show over there, if you have signed Thunder Rosa, do you announce it and make it a big deal? Or do you let it sit kind of like this and keep that air of, is she supposed to be here? Is she not supposed to be here? Do you think that that's kind of the right way to go?
I think having the air of her being a mystery would be great, but that ship has sailed. She had too many matches on TV. I really think that if you're going to have her now against Britt Baker, make the call, pull the trigger, said I talked to Tony. Even though I hate the fact that Tony Khan is an on-screen character we don't see on screen, I'd rather her in this case be like, I've been signed. Let's make it happen.
Do you not like it because you want him? Would you be okay with him being an on-screen person?
No, it's got to be either or. If you have someone who is an authority figure, they have to show their authority. You just can't say, I went to Tony Khan, because after a while, I'm starting to thinking, when Heel says this, are they just lying? Like, who is a real, where does a buck stop, right? So if you have a general manager, if you have a commissioner, that's one thing. If he's the anonymous guy in his ivory tower, that's another. Like, no one really asks about Shane McMahon's role in WWE, for example, to compare. But if you say, I went to Tony Khan signed it, you're cutting promos going, thanks for the check, Tony, you got to either not do that or give me a Tony Khan on TV.
Flobo, you just stumbled over one of the best things they could do, and that's someone getting a title shot because they said, I talked to Tony Khan, I want a title shot. They win the title, and then you find out that Tony Khan said, I never said that was okay.
What? We signed him?
Right, that would be fantastic.
That and is not all elite.
And then they kind of like, ha, 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 and then it becomes a, wait, no, you have to have the rematch on pay-per-view or whatever. I don't know. Again, it's not my place to promote, but I'm just saying,
yeah,
that would be an interesting thing there. Man, lots of stuff from this episode. I loved it all around. I thought it really got a lot of things going, but again, I think the biggest thing is just what is going to happen on Impact. Now it'll be interesting. Look, this is a win-win for Impact. We talked about it already, but man, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what it does for AEW, because obviously AEW has more fans to give Impact than Impact has to give AEW. I saw someone say on Twitter, and I thought this is interesting, maybe the new TV show for AEW is Impact, and Tony Khan is purchasing Impact. I don't know if I agree with that.
Because it does beg the question. Like, unless you're the kind of person who's like, I just want to like poke the giant, you know? why would AEW work with Impact? I get New Japan. It's something that's as large and it has its own mystique. Like, Impact has been in his own lane for longer than you've been around. Like, what is the appeal? So I understand that. But at the same time, man, it is pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, if it generates buzz, which it's doing, then, you know, it'll be a win-win for AEW as well. Very interesting stuff. Final question, Flobo. Would you like to see a authority figure put in place in AEW for an on-screen role not named Tony Khan? Not named Cody, not named, you know, basically if they had, like, Dario Cueto show up and take over.
Authority figures have always been a hot topic in wrestling. I mean, a lot of modern storytelling don't need them. You'll notice on Monday Night Raw how many matches are just made during the break. But then I also wonder, this is the same promotion that has contract signings, so which one is it? I think I'm in that Jack Farmer camp. It's good to have someone on paper. You can have them show up every 6 weeks or every 2 months to further a storyline. Like, we make fun of Regal because he says War Games, but the first time he did that, it was because it was a giant brawl and was out of control and the fans were going nuts and the authority figure came out and said, you guys want to fight? Fight at War Games. I think that puts the exclamation point you need. So yes, the authority figure is good for AEW. Use them sparingly so they don't become a weekly gimmick and you'll be fine.
I agree. I like authority figures when done right. Like I say, I think right now William Regal is the standard bearer in that regard. I always love Dario Cueto, though. He's one of my faves. That's right, a fave. But other than that, man, I think that's about it. I don't think we have much else to talk about without just retreading or hypothesizing or predicting or anything like that. And I know you got a hard out because you have all sorts of stuff going on. You're the busiest man in Hollywood, and that is hard to be. Aww. So before we go anywhere, let the people know where they can find you.
No, I just want to say, even though I tend to be the critical foil to Jack Farmer, I actually enjoyed tonight's episode of All Elite Wrestling Dynamite. Sting did appear. So actually, we talk about this. Where are the legends from our time period? Well, Sting is a living legend, and we saw him today. Although, when's Shaq coming? It's your boy, Flobito. You can follow me on Twitter, at FloboBoys, on Instagram, at Flobito, Flobito.com. And tomorrow, Jack and I are back together on the other half of the Wednesday Night War. We're doing Draped in Gold. Learn more about that show at drapedingold.com.
Yeah, man, I am excited to chat about all the things NXT tomorrow with you. I'm very glad I was able to miss the episode where my Heritage title championship tournament was wrong, and I didn't have to like eat that one. I got to skip it all together. I'm excited to chat about that tomorrow. I'm rambling, so sorry about that. Tomorrow, Draped in Gold. Also, check out the Anytime Radio Show every Monday. Also, I am a guest speaker for the Q Up DJ Conference. If you're a DJ looking to become a DJ, looking to learn how to DJ, you can check that out as well. And you can also check me out. I am the backstage interviewer, the standing by interviewer, the roaming reporter, as you could say, for the United Wrestling Network's Primetime Live. We just finished episode 12. You can check it out on Fight TV, where you can order all sorts of fun stuff, but check that out on there as well. I got to interview a bunch of people. One of them, one of the first people I ever got to interview there, Flobo, was a guy by the name of Danny Limelight. And I bring it up because he was on AEW Dark. So he's an amazing guy. He has amazing wrestler. He's got a bright future ahead of him. And
how much is a Jack Farmer autograph, by the way? I'm curious.
How much is Undertaker charging on Cameo? It's probably about the same.
1,000. I'm out of here. What are you doing?
I only got to sell one, Flobo.
It's true.
But yeah, lots of cool stuff there. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. As always, and until next time, folks, you know the drill. Do your best. Be yourself.